The way we understand it is there were approximately 180 attendees at a gathering on Mother's Day. And following that day, the very next day, one of those individuals tested positive for coronavirus. And anytime someone tests positive for coronavirus or any communicable disease, public health gets involved to do a contact tracing investigation. So we work with the individual that has the virus to learn who all they were around for, you know, a previous set time period. And then we start contacting those individuals to let them know that they have potentially been exposed to a communicable disease, and ask them to self-monitor to make sure they don't start showing symptoms, and what to do if they do start feeling symptoms, and ask them to self-quarantine so they don't potentially expose others. And so that we, you know, this case was no different than any other case. We have followed the same procedure. It was just for a larger amount of people than we may typically see.
So far, is it believed that all the people who may have been exposed to the virus have been tested for a current infection?
No, that is not what I understand. What we worked with our healthcare partners to establish a testing site for people to come and get tested if they so chose to do so. It is not a requirement that people get tested. That we recommend it, but we don't require it. And so information was given to all of those that attended, and some did attend to get tested and some have not. But to our knowledge, they may have been tested in other places.
With such a large group that was possibly exposed to the virus, I'm wondering what contact tracing looks like at that scale. Are you actually able to perform that work at this point? Do you have enough contact tracers?
We do, because as public health, that's one of the integral parts of public health on a regular basis. So like I mentioned, any communicable disease requires some contact tracing work. And so early on into the COVID-19 response, we added some people to our contact tracing team. We had 12 people assigned originally. Since that time, we've had numerous people go through additional training. And so now we have a much larger number that's available to us to work on contact tracing. And we are sending even more people through training coming up. It's either this week or next week. And so most of these to date are public health staff, but some are even other county agency staff who are volunteering to help us with contact tracing.
And are those contact tracers needed because there's an expectation that more and more people will possibly test positive for the virus in the coming weeks or months?
Well, we have the anticipation, I would say anticipate more than expect, but we do anticipate with the expanded amount of testing that we have available to us now, we will see more cases. And so, yes, we're planning for that as a just-in-case scenario so that we have enough contact tracers available to respond as needed. It varies greatly. It's a case-by-case basis. So, you know, one person who has the virus may have only been in contact with one other person. And so that contact investigation goes really quickly. We talk to that one individual, learn that, you know, give them the information that they need to self-quarantine to prevent exposing others, and it's done. And that is assuming that, you know, both parties are cooperative, you know, and then it can go to a much larger scale, just like the incident we're talking about where 180 people or a few over that were exposed. And so trying to reach every one of those individuals or family units, because some of those were children, and making sure that they have all the information they need to protect themselves takes quite a bit longer.
Bring up a good point about cooperation. Are you seeing that level of cooperation that you would like to see in the engagement between contact tracer and possible exposure?
Again, it varies. Some people are very cooperative. Some people have the fear of government, even though it's public health trying to help them and our community. They have, there are levels of fear that people don't want to talk to any government agency. And so trying to get in touch with them and help them understand that we truly only want to help them. We're not there to have any type of policing powers. It takes a good bit of skill and time on our nurses' part to have that conversation with every person.
Bring up policing powers. I think there are some questions regarding the type of enforcement authority that public health has in situations like this. Does public health have any authority to cite or close large gatherings in the future?
I know I keep saying this, but it varies. Specific cases, a health officer does have the authority to implement isolation and quarantine orders. If someone refuses to isolate when they are contagious or infectious and could be putting the public's health at danger by going out. As far as closing gatherings, that is not something that public health is doing. That gatherings are currently listed as a stage 3 event in the governor's state order. And while Butte County was fortunate enough to be able to move further into stage 2 under the state's orders, we do not have the authority to move into stage 3 or move things from stage 3 to stage 2. So, gatherings, any type of gatherings, are under stage 3 and not permissible under the state order at this time.
If I may pivot briefly to the county's health officer, news broke just before the weekend that Dr. Andy Miller, the county's health officer, tendered his resignation. His last day will be July 10th. Did Dr. Miller's resignation come as a surprise to the public health department?
No. It's unfortunate that it is sooner rather than later, but Dr. Miller works under a contract, and his contract is up in October of this year, and he did not plan to renew his contract. This was even before the COVID-19 response started, but he made the decision that the timing is difficult to just end the contract in the fall because of the difficulty in locating a health officer. So he made this decision to help us in order to help us have someone on staff and somewhat oriented to the role in time for the annual fall disease season, so to speak. So flu season comes at that time. There's a potential that COVID can be a heavier workload in the fall. And so that's one of the reasons that he made the decision to leave in July instead of waiting until October.
The timing of the resignation may raise some eyebrows. Butte County was recently given that go-ahead to move further into phase 2, California's phase 2 roadmap to reopen. Were any disagreements on the part of public health and perhaps the health officer related to his resignation?
None whatsoever. There has been no disagreements.
Going to that search for a replacement, public health announced that in the event COVID-19 does return, as is expected from health professionals, it'd be important to have a health officer in there. I'm wondering what public health thinks about COVID-19 in its current stage in Butte County. It looks like it's still here. So returning, I'm trying to figure out what that returning word means.
Oh, sure. Of course. COVID-19 is still here, of course. But what we mean by returning is that according to national health professionals, there is a potential that COVID-19 will be, we might see a surge, so to speak, of cases in the fall. And so that's our concern, is trying to get someone on staff and have them here and oriented in the event that that happens.